You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. Now, if you're as old and cranky as me, you'll know that's a Beatles tune. It's a Beatles song called Revolution. Or Revolution. And that's exactly what you've just joined. Revolution Live, our monthly one-hour catch-up, our meet-up with somebody very interesting, particularly so this time because it's about the spectacular success story that is Norway and the electric vehicle, and our guest, Christina Boo. Welcome, Christina. How are you?
Thank you, Roger. I'm very well, thank you.
Did you like the build-up?
Very, very good. I don't know, maybe you're better at the guitar than singing, I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, thank you for that critique. I think you're spot on. But anyway, listen, we've got an hour. We've got some wonderful guests. We always have wonderful people come along, ask their questions. Sometimes we get them on stage. We'll see what we can do this time because we've got a lot to get through. Because obviously to tell the story of what Norway's done so successfully in an hour isn't possible, but we're going to try and sort of scratch the surface. So let's have a look at who we've got. Nigel. Nigel's joined us from Spain. We've got Pauline, who's joined us from the Netherlands. We've got Masij, who's joined us from Poland. I probably pronounced that wrong. Apologies. Diana from Mexico. Here's the thing. It's always very international, Christina. So you're going to be talking to people. How would I describe it? Hither and thither. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
Good. Okay. Right. Let's crack on with it. We're going to go through a number of questions. Like I said, I've got a few lined up, which I'm going to ask you about. If you're listening to this as a podcast, by the way, we always say, where were you? We understand it. It's a working day. You probably were working. You're now catching up in the car or somewhere else. We hope you're going to enjoy the next hour. And we're going to kick off with the usual part of the show, which is a poll. We ask people a question. Norway's been breaking electric vehicle sales goals for over a decade. So what's the secret? Here we go, Christine. You might be surprised at this. What's the key factors for Norway's successful EV adoption? 4% said it was green taxes, so hardly anybody, you could say. Sufficient infrastructure, that was 16% of the respondents. 25% said it was government incentives. And then over half, 56% of people said, well, it's a combination of many things. What would you have answered to that, given you know the answer, kind of? What would you have said to that question?
I'm with the 4%. Green taxes, yes.
Indeed.
Elaborate, right. Of course. Yeah. No, but there are incentives as well, obviously. But what has really made a difference in Norway has been green taxes. It's not just about promoting electric cars, but also taxing petrol and diesel cars heavily.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get into all of that. But before we do, please tell our guests, our wonderful visitors today, exactly who you are and precisely what you do for the Norwegian EV Association. Because I know, but lots of people perhaps don't.
Yeah, I'm heading the Norwegian Electric Vehicle Association, which is an NGO organizing EV drivers in Norway. We have more than 120,000 members. They pay a yearly fee to be a member. And our job is really simple. It's, we do a lot of different things, but most importantly, we help our members with we have a call center, for example. We offer them member benefits and so on. But also very important is our work lobbying, working with the politicians, with the government bodies, both local and central. And we've been around for many years. We were founded already in 1995. And currently we are 55 people working here. So it's a busy organization, and we also organize the Nordic EV Summit, which is a conference happening in 2 weeks from now here in Oslo, with a focus on everything electric mobility things, not just cars, batteries, heavy duty, and so on. And EV Box will be there as well, I know, as one of our sponsors. So that's a great conference. So if anyone is coming in 2 weeks and you see me there, please say hello.
Yeah, well, I would be saying hello myself. Unfortunately, there's a horrible diary clash because I've been to them before. They're great events. They're superb for networking. It's a beautiful country to come to if you've never been. So there's lots of boxes to tick there and all of that stuff. Did you mention, by the way, how many members you've got in the Norwegian EV Association? I might have missed it if you did, so apologies.
I did.
It's over 100,000.
Over 120,000, yeah.
Wow. Well, I remember when you got to 100,000, that wasn't that long ago. So this sounds like it's picking up even quicker now these days. Would that be right?
Yeah, well, but it's always, we already have more than 600,000 fully electric cars on the road, so we should really have had even more members. But 120,000 of them are now a member with us, and pay a membership fee to support our work, but also to be part of the community and to get our membership offers and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. Now listen, what I want us to go through, and it's my job to do this properly, otherwise I'm rubbish at it, is Norway's success story. Definitely want to talk about charging infrastructure. That's a key part of what this show's about, as you know. Maybe how would we call it? Debunking myths, you know, talking about things that are sort of people would imagine, but they're sort of, well, they're rubbish. Let's use the right word. And then a big thing, I think, really, maybe to finish on is, you know, how to come the kind of political and the economic and on all those sort of bigger things that everybody faces, you know, around the world. So, and then a bit of a wrap up. So that's a lot to get through. So having had the first sort of bit there. Oh, and by the way, just so everybody knows, we will be sharing links to some of the stuff that we've done, or Christine is going to reference here, with some of the data in there, so we can talk about specific things. And we'll share that. If you want it, tell us that you want it, please, in the chat, and we make sure that we then send it to you, because obviously we've got your registration details. But can you kind of go through 5-10 minutes, sort of, what is the success story of Norway? How has this happened? All of these 600-something thousand people driving EVs, this incredible market share, which I'm sure you're about to tell us what it is, and all this other stuff. How did that happen?
Yeah, well, it's. I think the answer is maybe so simple that people don't really get it, which the poll in a way also, well, they were of course right when they said it's a bit of a combination, but the main reason is green taxes, because there's a lot of countries around that is just giving subsidies and that has they're no near the success that Norway has had. So it's all about making EVs more or less the same price as petrol and diesel engine cars. And that's something Norway has managed with taxing the sales of new cars. So they actually tax quite heavily. Buying a new petrol or diesel car today is very expensive. And the tax is also, it's based on emissions. So the higher the emissions from the car, the higher the taxes. Whereas fully electric cars are fully exempt, or has been fully exempt up until this year, both for this, you know, this registration or purchase tax, but also VAT, which is 25% in Norway. So both high taxes on the cars that we don't want and no taxes on the cars we do want. There's actually no it's not really subsidies, it's just zero taxes. That has actually made the price more or less level. And that's number one to succeed, because in most other countries, which probably most people know, it's still a lot more expensive to buy an electric car. And you get a few people on board with that, but they are very rich or very motivated. But to get the masses to choose an electric car, you need the price to be more or less level. And then we had some other incentives as well, locally, for example. And we'll come back to charging infrastructure. But there's not that much done from the government side when it comes to promoting public charging stations. Mm-hmm. In the chicken and egg discussion, we started with the chickens, the cars. When I started working at the EV Association, there were maybe one fast charging station or fast charger at all. I couldn't even drive an hour south of Oslo with an EV because the range was short as well. So the charging stations came slowly, little by little, later. And yeah, we'll come back to that more later, but it's mostly commercially built.
Yes. Yeah. Well, funnily enough, I was talking to someone about this the other day. I was at the commercial vehicle show in the UK and was talking about MODEC, which I know you know about, electric van that we had. And when people were buying that, charging infrastructure hadn't been invented. It literally hadn't been invented. There weren't charge point operators. You had to get the charging equipment. The offboard charger was, like we did at MODEC, was made by the company that made the electric vehicle, and they kind of had to get matched up that way. So there's another bit. So you mentioned it was formed in 1995, because I do listen now, you know, even though I didn't hear about the number of members. And at one point, I'd love to quickly talk about this bit. There was a pop star involved in helping make some of this happen. Can you tell people about that, please?
Yeah, if someone has heard about a-ha, the Norwegian group, they have a famous song called "Take on Me," for example, with Morten Harket at the forefront. He helped an environmental organization here in Norway called Bellona with being, yeah, they were a bit nasty, you could say. They passed the tolls coming into Oslo with an electric car in the 90s, early 90s. I think it was a French rebuilt EV, and they passed without paying. Again and again, and the car was confiscated, and they had to get it back. And nobody else wanted that car, of course, because the range was very low. And that was the start of getting an exemption from paying tolls for electric cars in Norway, which we had for a long time. Today, EVs also pay quite a bit. They pay less than ICE cars, but that has been an important incentive as well.
Yeah. Now, all of this stuff doesn't happen by accident. We all know that. You know, politicians need to be informed about things. They typically know lots about many other things. Well, we hope they do. But they won't know perhaps so much about charging, about electric vehicles, about all those things. So you mentioned earlier on in your intro about lobbying. So, maybe there's other words for it. I don't know. But what does that actually mean? What do you do? What have you done with politicians and other people of influence to actually get policy constructed, get it established, and try and maintain it so people don't sort of go cold on something because, you know, it suits them? Can you give us a little flavor of that, please?
Yeah, well, that's a show on its own. But I think lobbying is often a lot of different things. First and foremost, you need to have the facts and the figures right, so know what you're talking about. And then politicians, at least in Norway, are quite eager to listen if you know what you're talking about and have valuable input. And not just politicians, really, because for many years there were not much knowledge about electric cars and electric mobility around. So they needed our input and were pretty happy to get it. So very often, we have also been working with bureaucracy early on in processes to make things happen. For example, with the charging strategy that was presented by the government last year, it was initially started by us. I mean, it was a suggestion by us to make a strategy. We were working on it for quite some time, getting them to do it. And then when the strategy was actually being made, we also had valuable input into how the strategy should look like, as an example. But there's different ways, and it's all about being in dialogue, but also be clear when we don't agree, of course, because we have a lot of people behind us, and make sure we follow up on things that politicians have promised. And the most important promise in Norway is the 2025 goal, which was decided already back in 2016, which says that from 2025, so that's less than 2 years from now, all new cars that are sold in Norway should be zero emission. So our job is, of course, to continuously remind our politician that you decided this, and it was actually decided by all political parties in parliament. Well, then you make sure we reach this goal. And it's quite amazing that we are actually near, for the first time in history, I think, to reach a climate goal. Think about that. So we are close to 85%. I'm not including plug-in hybrids in that number. When I talk about EVs, electric vehicles, I only talk fully electric, because a plug-in hybrid still runs on petrol or diesel.
Yes.
So we are almost at 85% of new car sales that are fully electric cars so far this year. Last year, we ended at almost 80, 79.3. And but we have to get to 100. So it's still a way to go. And there are some challenges that we are still working on to solve to be sure that we manage and that we can actually reach a climate goal.
Sure. And this is amazing because, of course, in the UK, it's 2030. In most of Europe, it's 2035. I think in California, it's now 2035. It's popping up all around the world. Okay. The people on the other side of this discussion or argument, if you like, the ones that for whatever reason, and sometimes they believe they have good reason, don't want this change to happen so quickly, might say, for example, well, hang on, Norway doesn't have a car manufacturer. So, you know, it's easy for you to do this. That's one of the things they say. They also say, well, Norway's a rich country, you know, so all of this is being funded by oil money and all of this stuff. Can you give a little response to some of that? I'm not having a go at you. I know you're a lovely Norwegian person, but I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just trying to ask questions sort of on behalf of what I hear people say. So what would you say about that? You haven't got an OEM, you've got loads of money anyway, and, you know, that stuff.
Yeah, well, I did a TEDx talk about Norway's rich argument, which I call it, because I have that question so many times from journalists from around the world.
Okay. And it's to be boring.
No. Norway is rich. Norway is a rich country, but that is not why we succeeded with electric mobility. It's because of green taxes. So Norway is one of few countries in Europe which actually have a high income to the state from car taxes. Lot more than, I think there's one other country, it's Denmark, which hasn't really done the same as Norway, but we have had a big income to the state, which most other countries don't ask for, because in quite a few countries, of course, it's because they have OEMs. Like our neighboring country, Sweden, for example, never had taxes on the sales of new cars because they had Volvo and Saab. So we had all this money coming in, which other countries never asked for. And then we removed those taxes on the EVs. That's a very simple explanation, but still, that is really the main point. It's not oil money going into, it's not subsidies. So there's many other European countries that have direct subsidies, like Germany, for example. They had for a while at least 40,000 Norwegian kroner, I don't know, in euros, 4,000, I guess, 4,000 euros in subsidies, direct subsidies. We haven't really had that. But of course, it's costly not bringing VAT in, which we haven't done until this year. We now have some VAT on EVs. But on the other side, reducing CO2 emissions costs something. And it's going to be more and more costly the longer we wait until we succeed with cutting emissions. And my point is also exactly what Norway has done is not necessarily what other countries should copy, but many more countries should do something similar. They should at least start taxing the cars that are polluting the most and not use that money to help EVs. And then the next question, of course, is, what about, is this fair? That's often the second question. Why isn't it unfair having some subsidies or help for EVs because it's only rich people buying these cars? That's my point with taxes. So you have the rich people buying the bad cars, paying the rich people doing the right choices, because it's actually companies and richer people that make the choices that the rest of us depend on. Most people are in the secondhand
used cars. Yeah, I was just about to say that. You read my mind. You know, used cars, the ratio once you get going, once, you know, where we are currently with combustion cars is, I think in the UK, the ratio is about 4 or 5 to 1. You know, for every one new car bought, 4 or 5 people are buying a used car. So those used cars have got to come from somewhere. And typically they are, of course, they're new and they're more expensive. So I'm completely with you on that. Thank you. That was good stuff. There is so much more I could talk to. By the way, anyone in watching, any of the audience, please put your question in the chat. You don't have to, but if you have one, please ask. Please put it in there. We will get Christine to answer it. Let's get on to charging infrastructure. One of the big challenges for sure is equity. It is fairness. Is the issue between people who live in cities, who often are the wealthier people, let's put it like that as well. But what about equally distributing charging infrastructure throughout the country, rural areas and all that stuff? Has the Norwegian government, or have you with them, done anything in that regard? Any sort of work in that area?
Well, first of all, very little governmental money has been put into building the fast charging infrastructures, you know, all the stations that we have. Very little.
Oh, okay.
And this is also, I think it's debated almost too much in Europe, at least, that everyone's are talking about the big challenge with charging. And it is a challenge, but it's not that big. What we've seen in Norway is that when the cars started entering the roads and we got to a certain amount of cars, the interest from commercial companies really started growing as well. So currently we have close to 6,200 fast or super fast chargers in Norway. Most of them are now 150 kilowatts and above. They're covering the whole country. You can easily drive all around the country. We have about at least 20 different companies that are offering fast charging as a service, earning money on it. Of those, there is about 7 bigger ones. So some quite big ones, like Tesla, for example, or
Recharge,
which is a big one, yeah. Circle K, and so on. And there's a lot of smaller ones as well. So it's a few years back, I was quite worried about charging because we were getting more and more cars. Currently, more than 20% of all passenger cars in the country are electric, fully electric cars. And we were just sort of picturing more and more queues, more and more problems. But last year, of the 6,000, a bit more than 6,000 ones we have now, already 1,500 of those, 1,500 were built last year. So it's just being built more and more. And this year, I mean, we're only halfway through April, already 550 more almost have been put in place. So it's exploding in a way with commercial companies. So the only, I think we've spent about 35 million euros around there from the government during these years to, first of all, to get the first few chargers up along the main highways all over the country. So that was the sort of the start to get the backbone infrastructure up. And then after that, it's been happening mostly commercially, apart from, and back to your initial question, some areas like the very north, where there been some funding to get this infrastructure in place.
I think
some
that's
remote
inevitable.
Locations. So remember, Norway is a big country. It's the size of Germany and very sparsely populated. So of course, you need to get to a certain level before it's commercially interesting to build. This is a lot easier in more populated countries.
Yeah, no, that all makes sense. Can I ask you a question, maybe a bit unfair because you might not know this, but what's the ratio of people that live in a house with a drive where you can have a home charger compared to people who live in apartments? Because that's always one of the issues, certainly here in the UK, that it's all well and good if you've got a house with a drive and you can charge at home. But what if I can't do that? I've got to park on the street, whatever. How's that shaping up in Norway?
Yeah, it's not as bad or good as in the UK, I tell you. I don't have the exact rate. But of course, in Oslo, which is the biggest city in Norway, it's a lot of people who live in apartment buildings and also people on the street. So we have that challenge as well, but of course, not anywhere near the challenges that you would have in London, for example. But I still have to remind everyone that cars are still parked somewhere. Which means, yes, it's a challenge, but it's not impossible to get a certain amount of chargers up. And Amsterdam, for example, have managed. And it's also a very, you know, a very dense city.
Yeah. And we're getting a few questions in. So I'm very conscious I don't want to not ask those. I'll come to those in just a few minutes. A couple of other quick questions then on this charging arena. What is, I've heard something, the right to charge. I probably should know what it is and I don't. What is that? Is that a government policy? Is that something you've created as the Norwegian EV Association? Or what is the right to charge?
It's actually a law that has been implemented and, the idea was ours. We learned that California had a similar law. So some years back, before EVs were starting to become mainstream, we got a lot of questions from people living in apartment buildings, especially in the Oslo region and so on, saying that I have an EV, but the board of my apartment buildings denies me, that they won't allow me to charge and they don't want to install any chargers. They don't want to help in any way. So we suggested that we should have a law that and it's now in place. And it says that you can't deny a person or people in an apartment building to have charging. But the law also states that the best way of doing this is, of course, to collaborate and build and do smart charging, obviously. So now it's less of a problem today because in a city like Oslo, I mean, already more than 30% of all cars are fully electric, and then you have plug-in hybrids on top of that. So if you have a parking space with your apartment and there's no charging there, the value of that apartment is going to decrease. So now it's, I mean, most apartment buildings are now doing this, that the boards are doing it, they want to do it. But for many years, it was a challenge. And that law has been important to actually make it clear that you can't deny, you can't make up an excuse, like fire hazard or something, other stupid myths that are around, and say that you can't do it.
That's really interesting, because a lot of the episodes we've had of Revolution have been about the challenge around grid connections, permitting, the time it takes, sometimes years. So are you saying that the right to charge has helped condense some of that, has actually tackled some of that bureaucracy, or that, you know, that sort of stuff? Is that what you're saying?
Now, this is first and foremost apartment buildings and the sort of pressured the boards that might say no, that now you can't say no unless you have a very, very good reason for it. Of course, it's also helped a lot that the city of Oslo, for example, have had some support directed at apartment buildings. And you have to do smart charging, or else, of course, the grid, there might not be enough electricity. But that's not even needed either, because let's say you have 200 parking spots. There's no way 200 cars are going to charge at the same time. Most cars are parked a lot longer than they actually charge. So you just have to sort of do, deliver the electricity that is there and share it between the cars, to say it simple, in a simple way. And those are the system that is now implemented in apartment buildings and bigger parking spaces in Norway.
Yeah. And I think one thing that we should say, and it's fair to say, is that for all the success that you've had, and you certainly have in this adoption rate, the attitude towards it, the government support, all these other things, charging isn't perfect yet. It isn't like this is exactly what to do. It works, you know, brilliantly everywhere all the time. You know, because we're talking about a huge change here, shift from something that's been around for over 100 years to something which is still relatively new. So I think it would be wrong to suggest that, you know, oh, it's perfect. You know, you've absolutely got it.
Not at all. But people tend to focus more on the problems than the solutions. So you just have to get, you know, to the task and start working, and it's possible. Very often I'm surprised about how fast this has happened. And, you know, we did this in 10 years. In 2012, the market share was 3% already, which was quite high already back in 2003. But now in 2023, we are at above 80%. So it's been an immense change in a very short period of time. And mind you, it's not like Norwegians are more environmentally friendly than, you know, other Europeans or in any other country, really. Actually, we're probably a bit the opposite when you look at service being done on this. And it's easier in Norway. I mean, it's freaking cold here most of the time. It's high mountains and long distances. But there's been green taxes, and it's been my biggest surprise, because I've been working with electric mobility for many years now, has been how quickly people's mindset change about something. Because when I started working with this, most people were saying, no, I don't believe in it. I'm never going to have an electric car. They didn't have knowledge about it, and they were skeptical. Today, this is becoming completely normal. And I very often meet people saying, I used to be a petrol head. I was never going to get an electric car. But now I have one, and I love it.
Yeah.
And they actually admitted that they love it now.
Christina, so much of how you're answering, what you're saying, absolutely the way you're saying it, your passion and enthusiasm for all of this suggests to me, and I think a lot of people listening, is a big part of why Norway's been successful is you and your team, is the fact that is a Norwegian EV association. Because I don't know everywhere around the world, but I can't think of many other countries where there is an association, where there is an individual who's got confidence and character and all those sort of traits to stand up and be counted and get on with it. So, you know, I know you're my friend. Let's declare we're friends. But I want to tell you that publicly, you know, a lot of what you're describing and clearly what has happened in Norway is because of you and your team. And I know you're a huge team player. So that's a big shout out to the Norwegian EV Association. Right. Look, let's get someone up on stage because I think it's long overdue. It's not my turn to answer all these questions. Who have we got? Oh, by the way, someone says, could Christina please relocate to the UK and be our prime minister? So do you fancy that?
That's nice. But I must say, though, that it's civil society has an important role to play, as do politicians, as do the industry, and especially the OEMs, but also the industry within charging. So there's a collaboration, and where all these things play together and work together, it can create magic. And I think that's probably what has happened in Norway, that it has been also very forward-looking politicians, and maybe also quite a broad agreement on this, that this is a good thing. Although, of course, there's been discussions. And I think in that sense, it's been important that we've been there often than to be in the debate and say, no, this is not right. It's too early to reintroduce taxes, for example.
Yes, yes. So Marcus, for example, says, he's from the UK, by the way, from a public charging point of view, have you seen a trend when it comes to EV drivers choosing where to charge, i.e. destination chargers versus roadside versus motorway service? And obviously there's a big cost implication in that, but can you help Marcus in the story there that you've seen?
Yeah, actually, destination charging is something that we've been focusing on more and more. And it's quite cool that I think about a year ago, we were in the media in the south of Norway, close to a zoo or an area which a lot of people visited, and they didn't have any chargers. Yep. And we were sort of telling them in media that this is not good enough. You should have destination chargers. And then earlier this year, the local government decided to fund destination charging in this area. So that's right. One example. But of course, the public, it's a lot nicer to be able, if you know there's a charger at the hotel that you're visiting or the site or whatever, and you don't actually, you can actually skip stopping at the fast charging station on the way there. You would do that. Mm. And that's something that tourist places and hotels and restaurants or whatever need to understand, that having that infrastructure ready for your visitors, it's actually a good thing. Because, I mean, this revolution is coming everywhere. So be there and tell people that they can charge. And there's no problem that people can obviously pay for it. It's that's not the case. It's just easier to charge overnight than having to stop if you don't need to stop.
Absolutely. So let's rattle through a few more questions. Benjamin says, are there any Norwegian companies providing DC chargers?
Not right now, but there are some plans by a few.
Okay.
I'm not going to go into detail.
No, that's fine. Yeah, you know stuff and you're not allowed to say stuff. That's how it is, isn't it? I know this to be true. Robert says, does Norway also suffer from infrastructure capacity limitations? In the Netherlands, we're presently often down to only 20 to 50% max charging speed. I guess he's talking obviously about peak times, like holiday times, maybe a Friday, you know, compared to a Tuesday or something. Anything to help Robert on with that?
We're a lot better off than most countries. We have a very, very strong central grid. But what we see is that there can be challenges in the local grids, different places. And also now there's a lot of interest, of course, in getting more electricity, not just from cars or mobility, but the electricity demand is increasing. Also, one example is that there's being built several battery factories in Norway at the moment. They need grid connection. So we will need more electricity. So this is a big debate in Norway. How are we going to get enough electricity to serve all, so that anyone that needs it can get it? What's often exaggerated, though, is how much electricity is actually needed, because people tend to forget that electric cars are very efficient. So the government agency in control of the central grid, they did a calculation saying a few years back saying that with the current electricity production in Norway, if all passenger cars are electric, they will only demand 5%. So it's not that much. And again, we need also to produce more renewable energy. We need windmills, we need solar panels, we need a lot of new energy production. But I think the challenge in the Netherlands is probably more challenging than in Norway. But again, here, smart charging is important because cars doesn't necessarily need to charge at peak hours.
Yes. We've had the lovely Linda Grave, both as a guest on the show, as talk speaker on the show, etc. And here she is now asking, I think you know Linda, how does Norway deal with CPO reliability and ensuring uptime? We do get now measurements. There are companies that will do surveys, etc., and see who's the best and who's the worst, to obviously put pressure on people. How's that working in Norway? Do you do that measure? Do you see the kind of, you know, that league table?
Well, they all claim to have very high...
of course they do!
Yeah. But what I can say is that we started very early with charging and so on. And for several years, it was a lot bigger problems than we have today. I mean, there were often downtime because the infrastructure wasn't... The chargers weren't good enough, not for a cold climate and not for the heavy use that quickly started happening in Norway. So today it's become a lot better, both with better technology, better chargers, but also better software and better control and so on. So it is better and better. But this has been something, because we do big surveys among our members and EV drivers in Norway, the EV driver survey that we do yearly, we have last year we had 16,500 replies. And then people do complain that there is quite a bit of downtime still, but it's going down. So it's getting better. And then again, of course, it's a more bigger problem if you only have one fast charger, two or three fast chargers in a location. But currently we are getting very big stations in Norway with 10, 20, 30, 40 chargers in the same location. And if one is down or two is down, it doesn't really matter. Because the capacity is a lot better too.
Sure. I'm going to challenge you and myself. I'm going to ask you four questions. If you can answer them as quickly as possible, because there's a bunch of things I wanted to go through as well. So I'll rattle through them. Tom asks, and he says, thanks for your insights. In hindsight, from what you know now, would you still choose the same chicken and egg scenario? You know, the take up of infrastructure and all that stuff. He's from Edinburgh, by the way. Lovely part of the world up in Scotland. So would you do the same thing all over again, given what you know now?
I think the best thing is if it can happen side by side, but you shouldn't start with infrastructure because then it's no use. You need to do both things at the same time.
Yeah. And infrastructure is already there in people's homes. And I know the argument about the people isn't. Okay. Matt asks, we're also keen on asking the UK government for a right to charge here. Just wondered, are there any case studies that you have online that they can use as evidence to show it's working? You know, is that something you could help with, please?
I start to understand we should actually try to translate this law or something. But just send me an email and I'll try and see if we can send over some information on this.
Okay, Matt, we'll try and do that. And for everyone else, because it's a great question.
Our webpage is elbil.no. It's all in Norwegian, but if you use Google Translate, you will find my email address.
Nice one. Yeah, and that's Elbil, E-L-B-I-L, by the way, if anybody... Look, see, I speak Norwegian.
.no, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Marcus asks, now the public charging infrastructure is at a point where a driver has choice over which networks they use, your point about more availability, do you think there needs to be more focus on driver experience when charging in public? You know, you can answer that question, I won't expand it. What would you say to that?
Well, some of the companies are very—they're very eager to sort of own the customer and say we are better than the others. You should charge with us. My experience: most people don't really care. The most important thing is that the charging station is where, you know, located where it needs to be located, where on the way you go, and also that there are some service available. That, for example, there's a petrol station or something else. So they don't really care whether it's that company or that company. Although they probably, if you ask the CPOs, they would say something, they would say something different.
Right. Oh, by the way, someone possibly in your team actually has answered this business about how many people live in flats and houses and all that stuff. About half, 48% of all households in Norway live in a detached house. That's not that different to the UK. In 394 of the country's municipalities, over 50% of households live in detached houses, according to Statistics Norway. 24% of households live in blocks of flats, I guess that would be. Okay, that's good. Thank you for that. Martin, one more question, then we're going to jump onto something. Martin Fu asks, since Norway's main supply of electricity is from hydro, how big a role is that fact in Norway adoption of EVs as a national policy? I guess you could say the same for France with nuclear. You could say the same for Iceland. You could pick a number of countries where there's a lot of renewables. It hasn't got in the way, has it? It's been a good thing, but any particular sense in that answer?
Absolutely a good thing, but it's an EV makes sense anywhere. The dirtiest grid in Europe is Poland, I think. An EV makes sense even in Poland. It's slightly better when it comes to CO2 emissions, actually, and it's a lot better when it comes to local emissions. And then we can't wait until we have 100% renewable electricity production worldwide before we start introducing EVs. We have to do the change to EVs, because changing the car fleet takes a long time. We have to start that now immediately and do it as fast as possible. At the same time, we need to get more renewable energy production up and happening as soon as possible as well, if we are going to be anywhere near cutting CO2 emissions in time. And this is also the reason why we should, as soon as possible, stop selling new cars or buying new cars that are not electric or doesn't have the possibility of running on renewable fuels. So that's what we have to stop. We have to stop the new entrance of new cars that pollute. We can't do that much with the cars that are already here, but we should at least stop selling new ones. So 2035, in my opinion, is too late. But at the same time, it's extremely important that the European Union have stated that year, because it points out that this is where we're going, which probably will make this transition happen a lot faster.
Oh, Christina, I'm telling you, you need to go into politics. You are so convincing and compelling. You know what you're talking about. And honestly, I'm listening to you thinking, yeah, okay, I'll do what she just said.
Problem is, right. I don't know anything about other things. That's the problem.
That's fine. Listen, I want to rattle through a few things. You've got lots of EVs now up there in Norway, all of this stuff. So let's go through something that comes out a lot more now in the press, because I think people who don't want EVs are panicking a bit. So people are saying, you know, some people are hesitant to change because they're hearing rumours spread about things like, you know, fire hazards. You know, they catch fire, don't they? You know, this big hot battery. I'll do them all. That's one of them. So fast charging in the grid, you know, it's just not going to work. You know, if everyone wants to charge their car, how's it possibly going to work? All the lights will go off. No one's fridge will work, all that kind of stuff. And then residential charging, they say without expensive upgrades, it's not possible and electricity prices are going to go through the roof. You know, that most people's houses just can't accommodate a charger outside charging up their EV. What would you say to any of those three things and all the other things you hear that people get a bit worried about, who don't know the background you know and many other people? How could you reassure people, please?
Well, there are challenges. First of all, with fire, there's no greater fire hazard with EVs than other cars. Probably it's actually the opposite. We had a big fire at Sola Airport back in 2019. The first rumor was that it was in the media that it was an EV that caught fire. I think it was a couple of hundred cars that burnt in this big parking building.
Oh, yes. Yes, I saw that.
The end conclusion was that there was not an EV that started a fire. It was an old, I think it was an old diesel or something. I can't remember the brand, but still. But furthermore, of course, there were a lot of EVs there. And the fire brigades actually realized that none of the batteries caught fire. And it might actually be in the opposite, that it actually helped spread less because they didn't have any fuel that caught fire and so on. So a fire in a battery is different, and it can be a challenge putting that fire out. That's something that the fire brigades in every country need to learn and to understand. But the chance of a battery catching fire in the first place is very low. When a grid, we already talked about that a little bit. And yes. And the challenge is bigger in some countries than others. But let's start focusing on where it is possible to do this, not start talking about the places it's the most difficult. And it's the same with street charging, for example. Most countries have detached houses as well. Well, start there at least. And also start gradually also focusing on apartment buildings and the, you know, street charging and so on. You don't necessarily have to start on the biggest problematic areas. And then luckily, we're helped with better and better technology. Norway has done this transition with pretty, not bad technology, but at least in the beginning, back in 2012, as I said, where we had 3%, we didn't have many long range cars. Now the range is getting higher. And also charging speeds is really improving. We get in more and more new technology. Remember that this technology transition hasn't really happened for that many years. It's a revolution on the go also with this. So there's a lot more happening going forward that will also help the situation. Also price-wise, the price of the EVs are coming down, luckily. So it also means you need less incentives in other countries than we maybe have had in Norway. I think that the transition that we've seen here is going to happen even faster in many other countries because of this technology change.
Yes, economies of scale and all sorts of things. Yeah. By the way, to the best of my knowledge, I think Oslo is the only city in the world that has been trying out, well, certainly got established cable charging, we've been talking about that, but also battery swapping now with NIO, and also you've had some wireless charging. So who knows how those other two things, you know, swap and wireless will sort of figure into the scheme of things. But don't answer my questions or points. I'd rather ask the audience's questions. So let's whiz through a few of those. Daniel says, do employers provide car park charging for their employees? Do you know? I mean, maybe some do, some don't. But do you know anything about that?
Yeah, some do, some don't. In the city of Oslo, where we work, we don't have any parking spaces. You need to get the electric tram or the bus, electric bus to work. But so it's fewer and fewer parking spaces, at least in the city center, because here they're focusing on public transport, walking, cycling. Some places, of course, they do offer, but more usually maybe they charge a bit.
Mm. Now, you mentioned something very important there, buses. So what about commercial electric vehicles? What about buses, taxis, vans, trucks? Because when we talk about equity, when we talk about giving, you know, the whole population access to cleaner mobility, how do you have loads of electric buses and loads of electric taxis now?
Yes, it's been a bit slow when it comes to taxis, but now it's really happening, especially here in Oslo. With the public transport here, we already always had electric trains, electric trams. Now all the ferries in Oslo and also actually around Norway, we have close to 60 full electric ferries now, car ferries as well. So Oslo is very close to electrifying all of its public transport. So now, very soon, all the buses will also be electric. So they just got another, I think, I can't remember, it was about 200 new electric buses just this week or the last week. And they're getting a new bunch later this year. And then they're pretty much finished with electrifying all buses in Oslo area. So that's the goal of the public transport agency here in this region, that it's all going to be full electric. But of course, we also have to do long distance buses and heavy duty transport, which is something that we also started working on a bit at the Norwegian EV Association.
Right. A couple more questions. Benjamin Francois asked the same sort of question. Vehicle to grid. Have you got that yet? Is it coming? Or vehicle to home or vehicle to X, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, using the battery as a buffer, to your point earlier about where this goes, what Norway's shown us, how the grid works, that then the battery goes from being what some people still see as a liability into then being an asset, part of your home, part of the grid. Are you seeing any of that yet?
We don't see much of it. We're actually part of an EU project scale on some of my colleagues. So this is something we are really looking into. What I think is that you get actually quite a long way with smart charging as well, by regulating when the charging is coming with software systems. But of course, vehicle grid can be important, especially in some countries. But the technology is not mature enough yet. We need to get it to AC charging and not just DC charging. It's coming, but it also has to, as a consumer or a person, I would want to know that the system is taking care of my battery. That's possible as well, but you need to make sure that this sort of works on a bigger scale for it to have an effect. And yes, we don't really have that, no, in Norway at the moment.
Mm. Okay, well, look, that is, I think, going to come. I think it could be an incredibly significant part of what an electric vehicle is rather than a combustion engine vehicle. It then becomes an asset. It becomes a tool. It doesn't just sit there dead doing nothing like a car does today. And that could be, what would you call that? What's that phrase? A paradigm shift. I used to think that was a dance when I was younger, and people used to say paradigm shift. I think, well, what sort of dance is that? Is it slow? Is it fast? But anyway, I know I'm silly. Ankit asks something really significant, I think. Given how far and fast Norway's gone with electric vehicle adoption, you are likely to get there quicker with lots of batteries that then need a second life. Maybe in another EV, who knows? But certainly then when people look to change that battery for whatever reason, what's going to happen next? Are you seeing businesses emerge yet in Norway that are going to deal with recycling?
Absolutely. So there, I think currently we have the biggest recycling factory for car batteries in Europe. It's called Hydrovolt, partly owned 50% by Northvolt, the battery factory in Sweden, and other half is owned by Hydro, which is a big Norwegian industry company. So Hydrovolt is located a few hours south of Oslo in a city called Fredrikstad. Been there several times, really cool. And they are now recycling batteries already, and they're working on getting the recycling rate higher and higher. And you know, that it's quite valuable stuff in a battery, which is also very, very good to reuse in new batteries. So Northvolt is, of course, interested in that. And of course, secondhand use of batteries is also an issue, but recycling is very smart to do economically as well. And I'm not that worried about this now as I was a few years back. This is happening, and it makes economic sense to recycle batteries.
Hmm. And I think that's the key phrase, economic sense. I think the more out of the electric vehicle revolution that illustrates economic sense, both for individuals and companies, the faster people will adopt it. Because, you know, what do they say? Money makes the world go round. That's just how
absolutely.
It is.
Absolutely. And this is why also I at least become more and more sure that this is really happening now, because you start to see globally that the big money is being positioned or put into this electric mobility revolution, or whatever you call it. It means that this is just going to go faster and faster.
Yeah, it is. Listen, I want to sneak in a quick question. We kind of answered it earlier, but I'm going to just expand on it. Matt says, in the UK, we see huge demand for a limited supply of EV chargers at seasonal locations, such as the coast, down in Cornwall and Devon and places like that in this country. What's happened in Norway to ensure demand at those seasonal peaks can be met easily? You mentioned there typically weren't more queues. You mentioned there are more and more big charging things. Is that the way forward, or how would you respond to Matt, please?
Yeah, that's a good question. And this is definitely a challenge anywhere, really. In Norway, especially in the mountains, now during Easter, Norwegians tend to go skiing in the mountains, and then everyone goes to this, you know, different locations where everyone go. And then normally in the weekdays, then nobody charged there, but then on the weekend, everyone wants to, or on the way there. So that's definitely a challenge. And still, again, I was a bit more worried a few years back. It seems that even the companies building chargers also see the value of sort of having coverage in these locations as well. But we also have tests with fast chargers that can be moved. And actually, so you could say that in the summertime, you have it in the southern part of Norway, where a lot of people, Norwegians especially, go on holiday. And then maybe you have some of them moved for Easter or so on to other places. So that's possible as well. But yes, wow. This is a challenge. I mean, if there's a queue on the road, it's often also a queue at the chargers, because people charge. If there's a lot of people going the same place, there also will be a challenge with charging.
And there's often a queue at the petrol station as well. Of course.
Exactly. But this is also help with, you know, cars that can charge faster with better faster charging in general. And as I said, currently more than 20% of the cars in Norway are full electric. We are managing fine now, at least. Oslo region or in Oslo, both 30%. So it's working today. We'll see when we get to 50, 60, 80, 70, 80%. But so far, it's going okay. And the queues this last summer was a bit better than the year before because a lot more was built.
Yeah, although, got it.
I mean, now, maybe you can manage to be in a queue once in a while. I mean, most people don't fast charge very often. I probably do it maybe 10 times a year or something.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You do learn how best to make it work. Listen, this hour's just whizzed by. You know, we've had lots of questions. Thank you for asking them. You know, overcoming kind of political, economic, social, technical barriers. You've been doing it. There's a lot more we could have talked about. There's a lot more detail that I know that we'll put in the show notes, etc. People can come and look at your website. I know you can't help everybody all the time because you're mostly helping your 120,000, there you are, I remembered, members of the Norwegian EV Association and running amazing shows like your show in a couple of weeks. So you can't do everything for everybody all the time. But thank you for being so generous with us for this hour. Sharing, you know, what is a good news story. Oh, I mean, my word, so often these days on the news, all we hear are things that have gone wrong, things that are bad, tragic, sad, etc. It's wonderful to talk to someone who's upbeat, happy, busy and doing well. So thank you for cheering us up, Christina. Have a final word, please, before I wrap it up. Just say whatever you like for a couple of minutes.
Well, if everyone listening just can remember that it's focus on the possibilities rather than the challenges. You don't have to start with the most difficult areas or the most difficult cases. And remind politicians that they have an important role to play. Watch my TEDx where I explain this a bit closer. But every country can do something. And often a little bit is a lot better than nothing. And we've seen that in countries that are doing a little bit, things are really happening. Just look at Malta, for example, in Europe, which is one of the countries in Europe with the highest EV uptake because they have put policies in place. So it's often consumers are pretty quick at adapting to policies. So just start, you know, voting for the politicians or pressure your politicians to also make, you know, that they also need to do their part to make this shift happen faster, because it's happening anyway. There's no doubt in my mind that transport will be electric, but we need this to happen fast.
Wonderful. Well, look, fast is what you've been doing and fast is your message. So thank you for that. We appreciate it so much. And yeah, good luck. And sorry I can't see you in a fortnight. I know a lot of people will be seeing you and your team, your wonderful Norwegian EV Association team. So please pass on my best regards to all of them. And thank you on behalf of everybody watching today. Thank you for joining us. And we'll see you next month with another fantastic guest, although it's going to be a hard act to follow. But thank you for now, Christina. And we'll see you again soon.
Thank you so much. So nice to be with you.
Cheers.